Welcome back to EA Radio. I'm Farid Gio. I almost said that other name.
I'm Paul Prydecker.
And, you know, that rejoiner liner right there is perfect because we're talking with Randy Bass, Weather Research Branch Manager with the FAA. Welcome.
Thank you.
Randy, we're so glad to have you. We've talked to several of your colleagues this week, and a lot of it is about weather technology in the cockpit. And we... doesn't matter what you're flying, whether it's a small plane or a large plane, none of us really particularly like turbulence. There's things about it we don't understand. I remember reading in a small book about aviation the old joke about what causes turbulence, and the captain said, well, we're not quite sure. We think it's either tea or coffee, because every time we pour a cup, it gets bumpy out. But you're doing a lot of work on turbulence. Can you kind of tell us what you're involved in?
Sure. Like you said, turbulence is a problem for everybody, but it affects different aircraft different ways. A 737, you know, going through what they call light turbulence, is not the same as a turboprop going claiming light turbulence. So one of the things that we've developed over the years is a kind of a standardization of, you know, how do we normalize turbulence on a scale so that, you know, we can go from one aircraft to another. So we developed what's called an eddy dissipation rate, and the scale goes from 0 to 1.
There must be an acronym for that, right?
EDR.
Yeah.
EDR.
I love it.
It's the FAA. We have an acronym for everything.
Indeed.
The scale goes from 0 to 1, and once we determine the amount or intensity of that turbulence, put it onto that scale, and then you can take your aircraft size and compared it. So if it's a 0.19, for example, that may be moderate turbulence for a turboprop, light turbulence at best for a commercial, large commercial aircraft.
How are you communicating this to the pilot?
The air traffic controller is supposed to be communicating that.
Okay.
if it's occurring. What we're doing is conducting the research to determine where that turbulence is, detecting it, and then forecasting where it's going to be 0 to up to 18 hours out.
So with the advent of GPS, we sometimes have to pay attention to solar flares and things like that. What other space weather affects pilots? And what kind of research are you doing how that affects in the atmosphere?
Sure. The three primary areas that space weather affects aviation, like you said, GPS, which if you're flying at, you know, 35,000 feet and your GPS goes out for 10 or 15 seconds, not a big deal. Where it becomes a big deal is on final. When you're trying to land, if things go out, it can be...
You're doing an LPV approach or an LNAV, VNAV or something like that, where you really need that strong, reliable signal.
Correct. So that's one area. The second area is communication, mostly satellite communication over the poles. It's not as big a problem as it used to be because of some of the advances in the communications, but it's still a problem in some of those. And a lot of the commercial aircraft, if they have those problems with space weather, instead of going over the poles, now they have to reroute. A lot of times they'll have to land in Anchorage to refuel and then go on to especially the Far East. So it can be a big problem for them. And then the third one, and this is an emerging area, is a kind of controversial area, is radiation effects to pilots, air crews, and potentially passengers. And there's been some studies out in the last 10 or 15 years. Half of them say there's no problems. The other half say the sky is falling. So we're trying to work on that, figure out, you know, is it really a problem? If it is, how big a problem it is? Because it is becoming a bigger issue in the publicly.
Yeah, Randy, if I could, I'd like to return back to the turbulence. I just was thinking about a question. So when you're talking about EDR, eddy
dissipation rate,
right?
Yeah.
Are you getting data off of aircraft?
Yes.
Is that how we're getting this?
That's primarily how we're getting it. Some aircraft have sensors that provide that data. And so the and we prefer that much better than PIREPS.
Sure.
PIREPS are great.
But they're subjective.
But they're subjective. And if you're flying the aircraft, you need to be flying the aircraft, to, you know, not, you know, calling down to the air traffic control, giving them a PIREP. You can do that later. So the automated ones are much better. So we're so that's generally how we're doing it. We are also working on a technique to take the ADS-B out data that's already coming down off the aircraft and deriving turbulence data from that using a artificial intelligence. And the potential for that is now instead of, I think we get about 100,000 reports a day via the current way, we're talking millions of reports because it's every second, basically.
So with the ADS output, you're talking about getting changes in vertical and horizontal speeds.
Correct.
Okay.
And
that, temperature, probably.
Correct. And we're doing it off the data that's already coming down, so there's no need to put in new components into the aircraft. There's no cost to the pilot. We think it's going to be a game changer.
And that all feeds into the HAL 9000 and it crunches and comes up with models or in real time.
Exactly. And that's the part we haven't worked out all the details yet is who's, you know, where is that going to run? It could be in the cockpit, but it could be on the ground. And then compiling that data and sending it out to, say, the National Weather Service so that they can put it into their models and things like that. Those are the details we're still working out.
We're speaking with Randy Bass, who's with the FAA. We're talking weather research. How about some more acronyms? TBFM.
Time-based flow management.
And what has changed in the four-hour forecast to make that more accurate?
So the in the past, we actually have a requirement that we want the accuracy of a thunderstorm forecast 4 hours out within 10 miles of where it's actually occurring and within 3 minutes. We didn't have the technology before now to even try that. But with the increase in our model capabilities and satellite data, and improvement in satellite data and other forms of observations, we're getting to the point that we're getting close. We're still not there. Realistically, I think we're still probably 5 to 10 years out, but it is much better than it was before, and I think we're going to get there.
Just some weather forecasting basics that now they're meteorologists with all of this technology available. The models that come out, are the meteorologists still assembling the forecast, or are they just correcting whatever the models will kick out as a, you know, from this range is, you know, in the TAF, for example?
Sure. You know, that's a great question and something that we still kind of see going both ways. My personal opinion is, unless you have a very good reason, there's no reason to change the model forecast. Now, once you get out, you know, a day or two in advance and you're trying to pinpoint a specific event, that's a little bit different. The models aren't going to be able to get you down to that kind of fidelity. But if it's saying, you know, an 80% chance of showers at 4 o'clock this afternoon, 4 in 5 times, it's probably going to happen. So that's kind of where we're at with the model resolutions and accuracy right now.
Randy, we know you have a presence on the field. If people want to come by and learn a little bit more about this, is there somebody that they can talk to, and do you have some material for them, and where are you?
Sure. We have a booth in the FAA Safety Forum hangar.
So this is the...
right beside the tower.
Okay, that one, sure.
Right in the back of the... there's a basically an auditorium in the front, and then in the back we've got probably 8 or 10 different FAA exhibits back there, and we're basically in the back of it. And we've got monitors going on for various things like turbulence and some of the presentations that we've already given this week. We have a flight simulator that you can fly through different types of weather, and we have some virtual reality tools to play with and see the different types of weather in an educational environment.
So with the flight simulator, could that be used for like VMC to IMC demonstrations?
Yes, that's exactly what it's for. And if you really want to, you can fly through a thunderstorm, but I wouldn't advise it. But at least this way you live.
Yes, that's right.
So where are the frontiers? I mean, obviously we haven't we're doing much better with figuring out what's going on in the middle of a tornado, and it seems like Turbulence is another one of those kind of weird ones that's really hard to nail down. It seems like you're doing a lot of work with that. What are some other frontiers of weather forecasting that we'd really like to get a handle on that's hard to predict?
I already touched on the convection because that's always a problem, trying to pinpoint that. Icing, we're doing a better job with that, especially with some new satellite and radar techniques that we're able to detect that. And forecast it a lot better than we could, but we're not there yet. Turbulence, obviously. One of the other areas is ceiling and visibility. We still don't do a great job with cloud ceilings and visibility, especially forecasting away from airports. Airports, we've got ASOSes and other instruments that give us a good idea. But as we're starting to move away, especially for UASs, and helicopter support who don't operate out of airports, that's a big issue for us. And that's really where the next frontier for us is, and the very low-level weather.
It sounds like you're doing good work, but you've got more to do.
We have. I will always have a job.
Randy, so great to talk with you.
You're great. I appreciate it.
Randy Bass is the Weather Research Branch Manager with the FAA. You're listening to EAA Radio.